to episode 101 of the Golf Talk Podcast, brought to you by TheSandShop.com. Eric Brzezinski in the United States, and Alan also in the United States.
USA.
The Americans victorious for the first time in a long time at the Ryder Cup, and the second time in the past, I guess it's seven now, of course 1999 being the last time at Brookline, but the Americans winning 16.5 to 11.5. They go into the final day leading 9-7. And take more than half. They needed 5.5 of the 12 points. They ended up taking 7.5, winning for every format, I should say. They won 4.5 to 3.5 in foursomes. They won 4.5 to 3.5 in four ball. And they won 7.5 to 4.5 in the singles matches.
Yeah, that was really surprising. Paul Huizinger kind of changed up the format a little bit. And, you know, you had formats where the Americans historically have not played very well, and here they went out and they played great. I mean, there wasn't really a format that they played in which they played really poorly.
Right. It seemed to me that the key as far as golf goes this week was that the Americans played like the Europeans have played in the past. They made clutch shots to gimme range. They hold a few key putts. In general, played like the Europeans have played the past several years. You know, they made the putts and the shots when they had to. The 18th hole being the exception.
Oh, yeah, absolutely. It was a complete role reversal as far as the teams go. Other than, it was Ian Poulter who showed really the most emotion on the European squad. So that was kind of surprising to see that role reversal.
Right. The captain's picks on both teams performed pretty well. But the big story for the Europeans was, and this is one of the many topics we have in discussing the Ryder Cup, was that the big guns on the European team misfired. Patrick Harrington, Lee Westwood, Sergio Garcia, mainly, on the European squad. Didn't get much out of them. In fact, not a single win among those competitors. Sergio Garcia, 0-2-2. Patrick Harrington, 0-3-1. Lee Westwood, 0-2-2. To match Sergio. So a combined 2.5 points out of those three players.
And I think that was probably the most shocking of it. Garcia was one of the hottest golfers in the world. Harrington, yeah, he won two majors this year, although he has kind of fallen off the planet with the FedEx Cup. And, Westwood has played well, too. And to have these three, to have your three big guns, basically no show for the weekend, I really put Europe behind the eight ball.
American rookies more than made up for, they more than compensated for the European rookies who played better than those big guns, going 9-4-8. That 9-4 difference in wins and losses, also the difference in the matches, 16.5 to 11.5. It was a big deal, the crowd this week. We'll talk a bit more about its effect on people, but Paul Huizinger made a big deal out of the 13th man, and it's easy to cheer when you're winning. That's certainly a lot easier, but it was a big deal this week. The crowd really got into it. It embraced not only the people from Kentucky, but the team as a whole. You know, it was loud, it was raucous, and, it pumped the team up.
Yeah, it was as far as Ryder Cup venues, you can always argue, is this course up there with some of the other ones? I tell you, the crowds were just, they were phenomenal, and I really think that the fact that the players kind of fed off that, a lot of times, and one of my biggest complaints about the PGA Tour is they all look the same. Nobody gets excited, they get a birdie or an eagle. They tip the, they touch their hat, that's it. I've seen past Ryder Cup teams really not get that excited, whereas this group, they were pumped up and they were high-fiving and then they were getting the crowds riled up. It was, it was exciting to watch.
Well, it's a little unfair to say that they haven't been pumped up. They've been losing and losing bad. So it's tough that you're not going to run around fist pumping because you make a putt to climb back to three down. So, I think that's a little unfair to criticize them for that. They were certainly riled up in 1999, the last time they won, of course. So I can't say that. But the crowd, I think, was about a point difference in the Ryder Cup. I think 1 point you can give to the 13th man, and that, that wouldn't have changed the outcome or anything. But I think certainly over the course of a week, at least 1 point switched hands based on the crowd and the boost that they might have given the U.S. team. I will say I was surprised at how many European fans were there as well, though. You could hear them now and then doing their stupid Olé chant before eventually some American USA chants would drown them out. But they could be heard. The one thing I think, though, that's critical and that it stems from, or the crowd was part of it, was Paul Azinger. We've talked before about how relevant the captaincy is and how much blame and credit they get, which in previous years should be about zero. Hal Seton should be blamed, I think, for putting Tiger and Phil together. But beyond that, none of the decisions or choices by the captains have really mattered all that much. Paul Azinger has changed that. He's made the captaincy relevant and relevant going forward by changing the selection process and by showing the U.S. team that there's a different way to go about being a Ryder Cup captain than what we've seen in the past.
He was probably the best captain's pick of the obviously the last few, and it was like the guys playing really playing hard. Not that the guys in the prior Ryder Cups weren't playing hard for their captains as well, but it was, I mean, this seemed like the first time in quite a while that, you know, we talk about the President's Cup and the guys really playing hard for Jack, and it seemed like, you know, Paul Azinger he worked everything fine, from the pairings and getting the crowd pumped up and the selection process and really putting a mark on this Ryder Cup. I mean, he put his stamp on it, and I think it's great for future Ryder Cup teams for the U.S.
I think so too. The selection process will obviously be in place for the next Ryder Cup captain. I don't know that the next Ryder Cup captain, which is rumored at this point to be Corey Pavin, similar mentality, I think, to Paul Azinger, very much a, not so much a touchy-feely guy, but you know what, a be tough, go out there and do your job kind of guy. And I think that straightforward approach, you know, mixed with having fun and just trying to play good golf. Paul Azinger used the term on point. Everyone was staying on point all week. On point, just what can you do right now? He had a team-building coach. He had a coach there that helped him communicate with players, because the way you communicate with Phil Mickelson might be different than the way you communicate with Boo Weekly, which might be different than the way you communicate with any other human on the face of the planet. You know, he did things that mattered. As much as we want to say that Hal Seton and others didn't, they didn't. They tried to stamp their will on the Ryder Cup, I think, as a captain. Paul Azinger, I think, tried to realize that the Ryder Cup should go back to being fun, and it should be about the players stamping their will on the Ryder Cup, not the captain doing so.
Yeah, he was a great captain. He really was able to get these guys to play hard, and I think this really bodes well for future U.S. teams.
All right, we'll run down some of the players here. We'll start with the European team, because there's less to discuss there. Paul Casey, a total of 0-1-2. He had two halves, including a key match there against Hunter Mahan, I believe, in singles, where he won the 18th hole after Hunter dunked it, but winning 1 point. One of the captain's picks. He only played three matches, but wins 1 point for those out of those three. Not great, but not bad.
Pretty nondescript. You got 1 point. That's
same number of points as Sergio Garcia, though, who played in four matches, going 0-2-2. Sergio was 8-0-0 in foursomes, sat out the Saturday foursomes. Supposedly he might have had antibiotics the previous week and might not have been feeling all that well, but I'm pretty sure he would have played if asked. 8-0-0, so his winning streak came to an end with a tie in Friday foursomes, winning 1 point.
Probably, on the European side, probably the biggest shocker was the fact, I mean, I think if you'd read our predictions.
We all picked him to lead the...
We all picked him to be the... Because history dictates, this is where Sergio shines. You know, he gets excited about team. He doesn't have to worry about putting because he's got somebody else to help him read the line. And
he missed a lot of putts, too, on the weekend.
Yeah, it was pretty surprising.
Soren Hansen gets into three matches, wins half a point. Not much to say there. He was run over by J.B. Holmes, I believe, in singles. So half a point there. Mm-hmm. Padraig Harrington, four matches, half a point.
Yeah, I think this pretty much quashes any talk of player of the year.
Well, we'll get to that a bit later, but yeah, Johnny Miller at some point said, I think he needs to go home and work on his swing. He just wasn't in it the whole time. Miguel Angel Jimenez,
no.
Three matches, half a point.
That's rather shocking for somebody who's been there and done that before.
Yeah, so to this point, we've named five players. They have a cumulative total of 3.5 points, and remember, some of those points are doubled up because they're team play, so... 3.5 points among those first five. Then we start getting into people who actually earned a few points. Robert Carlson, 1-1-2, a decent Ryder Cup, and I think he was 6 under on the back nine in Saturday afternoon four ball. So that got him the win there. 1-1-2, winning 2 points, got on a hot streak and rode it right through to the finals.
Yeah, very, very impressive back nine.
It knocked off Justin Leonard easily in singles. Graham McDowell, 4 matches, 2.5 points, unheralded a bit, played great golf, winning 2.5 points in a losing effort, 2-1-1.
Yeah, played great.
Jackass Ian Poulter, the man of the European squad, 4-1-0, winning 4 whole points, made everything, hit shots close, was easily the most demonstrative of the European team, but for good reason, since he was the only one playing really good golf all week.
Yeah, and I will... I like my crow served warm with some butter, and I picked him to be the biggest disappointment, and obviously he...
Yeah, it still won't shut up the British press, I'm guessing, because he was a captain's pick. And, you know, they may have a point. Darren Clarke maybe could have been picked instead of Ian Poulter, and there's nothing to say Darren Clarke would have won 4 points. Maybe he would have won 3, maybe less. But he also might have spurred his teammates on via his personality, you know, and you can't measure that. You can't predict that. You can't figure out how much that would have affected things. But there are second guessers, and a lot of them live in the United Kingdom and Europe. Good luck, McFaldo. Justin Rose winning, plays in 4 matches, goes 3-1-0, winning 3 points. So a solid play for him. He beat Phil Mickelson in singles, and 3-1-0 is pretty good. Those two guys were the only players on the European squad to earn more than 2.5 points, and only one other person did that, which is Graham McDowell. Everybody else was 1.5 or less.
Right, and out of the entire team, those are probably three of the lesser choices to you would think that would be leading for points.
Yeah, Henrik Stenson 1-2-1, getting 1.5 points. Lee Westwood 0-2-2, 1 point, and Oliver Wilson 1-1-0, only 2 matches but wins a point, just as many as Lee Westwood in 4 matches. Lee Westwood, Henrik Stenson, players you would have think. You would have thought would have put up some points and didn't.
Yeah, just completely shocking for the European team that 7 of the points are going to come from Poulter and Rose, and that Sergio Garcia, Paul Casey are going to have the same points as Oliver Wilson.
On the American squad, Phil Mickelson, kind of a disappointment. He kind of rode Anthony Kam. He kept missing shots way left all week. He got 2 points, was embarrassed in singles, going 1-2-2, and most of the points he got were with Hunter Mahan or Stuart Sink kind of carrying him a little bit. Or not Stuart Sink, but Anthony Kim carrying him a bit.
Yeah, and it, you know, there was another match that, you know, they should have won. They were up 4 with, I think, after the first 6 holes or something like that. He just...
Yeah, and they did come back from being down with Anthony Kim a few times. But on his own ball, Phil Mickelson, not that great. I think he made 1 birdie in all of Sunday's singles action. He left putts short that had to go in. I don't know. Unfathomable. He's, I don't know. I called him on the live blog. I called him failure with a PH.
Very nice.
That might be a bit harsh. Stuart Sink didn't play great. Won 1 match, going 1-2-0 and earning a point. Kenny Perry made his career, capped his career, whatever he said. 2-1-0, played in 4 matches, winning 2.5 points, a solid effort. His one loss was a bit weak, but his 1.5 and his 2 wins, including Sunday Signals, were very good. 2-1-0, or 2-1-1, 2.5 points. Jim Furyk also 2-1-1. 2.5 points. Jim Furyk, also one of those older guys who hasn't played very well in a lot of previous Ryder Cups and had the memories of past defeats, and yet overcame them, beat Miguel Angel Jimenez in singles, and played pretty well throughout the week, hold some key putts.
Yeah, you know, Furyk played, you know, the last couple of years for Furyk hasn't played all that well, didn't know how he was going to be coming into the tournament or coming into the Ryder Cup, and yeah, I mean, he definitely, and he showed some fire from a guy who typically on the tour is pretty reserved and whatnot. So it was great to see. He played well.
Anthony Kim, 2-1-1, matching Jim Furyk's record. A little deceptive there. 2.5 points. I think, like I said, he was saddled with Phil Mickelson in some of those matches. So 2-1-1, including blowing out Sergio Garcia 5-4 in Sunday singles. Honestly, I mean, I don't know if the distinction can be made, but kind of reminded me of Paula Creamer blowing, I think she played Laura Davies out of the water in the Solheim Cup a couple of years ago. It was like 6-5 or something. Just absolutely seemed to birdie every hole. And when didn't birdie, you know, parred to Sergio's bogey or something. So he shot, I don't know. I mean, he was 8 under par or something through 14 holes. So
extremely impressive. He's the anchor for the next, you know, however many Ryder Cup teams.
Yeah, Justin Leonard added to his Ryder Cup highlight reel, not so much on Sunday where he got kind of beat hard. 2-1-1, 2.5 points again for Justin Leonard. Lots of lengthy hold putts there. Ben Curtis made the team, 1-1-1. He only played 3 matches, but he earns 1.5 points and really came through in Sunday singles. Wasn't a guy that you would look to in Sunday singles, but he won his match.
Yeah, that was kind of surprising for for Ben to do that. So, hey, I mean, that was kudos to him for coming out. He hadn't played all that great up to that point. So, yeah, good for him.
Steve Stricker, the worst of the Americans, 0-2-1, 1.5. I believe that was with Ben Curtis. Obviously, though, he contributed mightily with, you know, a 20-foot birdie putt and an all-world up and down on the 18th hole to salvage a half. And that half point mattered. That was the difference between 9-7 and 8.5, 7.5. That point mattered dearly to the Americans. 0-2-1 for Steve Stricker. Chad Campbell, 2-1-0, overlooked, I think. Hit a great shot to knock off Ian Poulter and Justin Rose, and then won his singles match.
Yeah, you know, he was very, very steady. I think out of all the picks, he was probably the biggest surprise, and he came through. He only played 3 matches and got 2 points.
J.B. Holmes and Boo Weekly, a couple of Southern guys, 2-0-1 each, 2.5 points. 3 matches only for each of them, but 2.5 points, so almost a perfect mark for both of them.
Yeah, you know, J.B. Holmes was picked primarily because he's from the area and allegedly, you know, knew the course quite well and things like that. And other than winning the FBR a couple times, that's about it.
Yeah, hadn't really done much. Hunter Mahan, 2-0-3, not a single defeat. Like Boo Weekly, like J.B. Holmes. The only 3 Americans to not lose a single match all week. Hunter Mahan, 2-0-3, 3.5 points and the leading point earner on the U.S. team.
Probably feels pretty good, especially after the interview he had in, I believe, Golf Magazine, where he kind of called out the PGA and the Ryder Cup and all that kind of stuff and took a little bit of heat for that. And for him to come up, I'm sure it feels pretty good to be the leading point getter.
So we'll be right back with another topic on the Ryder Cup from our forum, so stay tuned.
I mark my Titleist with 3 red dots around the number.
3 crosses around the script.
With my initials.
With 2 blue dots. A black dot here.
Here and here.
Just like that.
With my family's initials.
With an R and a K.
With 3 blue dots.
Red dot.
Un pequeño círculo.
Out on tour.
It's not how you mark your golf ball.
It's how you mark your Titleist.
How do you mark your Titleist?
Welcome back. Our forum topic of the week hints at Boo Weekly and Lee Westwood's reaction to the crowds at Valhalla. We'll make the point that Lee Westwood is basically the only European player to complain, but he made several comments over several days, including after Friday's play and after singles on Sunday, when he made several comments about how inappropriate the crowd was, how it was rude of them to cheer between shots, all kinds of stuff. Your take on that?
Wah. I'm not sure what this is all about, especially when nobody else on his team would back him up. No, you know, we heard comments of the crowd was great and it was a good atmosphere and all this kind of stuff. And it really just comes down to sour grapes. You know, it's they've won the past few and he's performed quite well and this one he didn't. So I guess blame the crowd for not playing well. I don't know.
Yeah, he said there were comments made about his mother, all kinds of inappropriate words he couldn't repeat, you know, and nobody else seems to have heard them. Nobody was ejected except a photographer who took pictures during Phil Mickelson's backswing on a chip shot, so no ejections for the week, no arrests. I'm not sure, you know, I would tend to side with, you know, the wah-wah sore loser stuff, especially since his main complaint is cheering between shots. But you know what, if Boo Weekly holds a 40-foot putt for birdie, you're not going to wait 3 minutes to cheer. You're going to cheer as soon as the damn ball dives in the hole. You're going to cheer for 30 seconds, and then Lee's going to walk around the green and, you know, look at his putt and line it up and stuff, and then you're going to get quiet for his shot, and that's what happened all week. Or, you know, someone sticks a shot close. You're not going to wait a minute and a half to cheer for the European team to hit their shot. You're going to cheer right then because it's a good shot. So, you know, that was his main complaint, the cheering between shots. Like, when else are you going to do it? That's the time you cheer.
Yeah, it's, you know what, this really, is it any different from when the Ryder Cup's over in Europe?
It's not, and I think he forgets that, so.
No, he played poorly. I mean, that's the bottom line. He played bad, the big guns didn't play well, and let's blame it on the crowd.
Well, and it was stupid of him, too, to say anything Friday. Because, come on, you tell a bunch, I don't care, you know, a subset of people, if you tell them, oh, this bothers me, is going to do it more. Just a subset. But it's stupid to tell them that.
Yeah.
It's stupid to give them an edge. I'm not saying it's gamesmanship, but some people in the crowd are going to do it. I don't care if it's 1%. 1% of 10,000 is a lot of people. So.
Yeah. I mean, it's bulletin board material, and the crowd ran with it, I guess.
Well, he's going to be a bit like Monty at this point, I think, now, because Monty made some comments about American fans, and now, not that Lee Westwood plays over here a lot, but not that Monty did either. And now I think that every time Lee Westwood plays over here, be it in the Masters, be it in the U.S. Open, be it in the PGA Championship, he's going to have some cotton in his ears, because I don't think a lot of people are going to, I don't think everyone's going to lay off, put it that way. We'll be right back.
I mark my tie list with a black line and a red line. Black dot over the nine.
A red line through the side stamp.
With a dot between the tie list and the number.
With Korean flag.
I mark my ball with a kangaroo. Does anybody else do it like this?
Check it out.
Out on tour.
It's not how you mark your golf ball,
it's how you mark your tie list.
How do you mark your tie list?
Welcome back. Three quick stories here to close this up, because it's a long podcast, but these are not Ryder Cup related, so if that's all you care about, you can stop listening now. If you care about Michelle Wee, though, you'll be interested to know that she easily made it through. I think she finished tied for fourth. She made it through the first stage of LPGA qualifying. She has one more stage to go. She, yes, tied for fourth. She finished minus eight overall with rounds of 70, 65, the low round of the tournament, 74, 71. There's been an aberration in the third round with the 74, including a triple bogey, but there you have it, tied for fourth and on to the final round of LPGA qualifying, where I expect she'll make it without much problem.
Yeah, she'll be on the tour next year.
And we have Will McKenzie winning the Viking Classic. Mark Ternesa came to the 18th hole, and I don't know if he chunked the crap out of his shot or something, but his second shot to the par 5 18th landed about 40 yards short in the water. And then Will McKenzie makes a birdie on the last hole to get into a playoff, wins it on the second playoff hole in dramatic fashion. So Will McKenzie wins the Viking Classic, gets himself a two-year exemption in a tournament that almost nobody of any name played. Half congratulations to Will McKenzie.
Yeah, sort of. Quit scheduling stuff the week of the Ryder Cup PGA Tour.
Yeah. Hey, it's the start of the fall series, and then we have the Tour Championship. That Padre won't be at.
The Vijay Singh victory round.
Yes, that Padre won't be at, and that Padre, he's ineligible for the Vardon Trophy. So, you know, this is our last story. Padre Harrington played his minimum of 15 events, but you need to play 60 rounds to be eligible. He's missed so many cuts, he's only played 52 rounds. So, he's ineligible for the Vardon Trophy. And I honestly think, you know what, if you don't win the Vardon Trophy, that puts a serious damper in your ability to be player of the year.
Yeah, it's over and done with at this point. I mean, you can't miss that many cuts, including two at the first two rounds. Yeah, goodbye. Hopefully this will put that away as far as Harrington being player of the year, and we'll just go from there.
I just wonder if he was not eligible to place, like, he'd have to play two fall series events. I guess they give out the award out after the Tour Championship, but I thought it was over the whole PGA Tour season. So, you know, if you really cared about the event or about that prize, you might be able to play in some of those fall series events, but whatever. Stop missing cuts, dude.
Yeah. Well, it's nice to know that Phil's leading it. So he's leading something anyway for this year.
Yeah. I looked at the Ryder Cup standings too, just out of curiosity. And Tiger Woods had 11,000 some odd points. Phil Mickelson was second with like 5,000. So it's almost like the world rankings, you know, where Tiger has more than a twofold lead over second place, and he played in six you know, things this year, and the majors from last year counted, and that was it. So mind-blowing yet again how good and how far ahead Tiger Woods is. Just a closing thought. Click on the links for all the stuff we've talked about on the show notes, which will be up before you listen to this, obviously. So for Alan Olson, this is Eric Brzezinski saying, hey, I was close. I picked the U.S. at 15.5. I ended up reversing my decision from the podcast last week, but it was right there in print Thursday morning, so there you have it.
I didn't change my mind. USA, USA, USA.
All right. Take care. Bye-bye.